This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, a very glorious and blessed Friday to you, Mr. David.
Hallelujah. Happy Friday, Mully.
Oh, my gosh.
What a day Thursday was in Chicago.
Holy cow.
We made it to the weekend. Happy Friday, as Dustin says on the pregame show.
I got to tell you.
You got to be just very excited.
I'm so over the moon at the idea that we have a Pope from Chicago. That blows my mind. I can't wrap my mind around it. And the amount of fun people were having, the amount of different goofy photos that I was sent with various, you know, Cubs, Sox,
Twitter was
Bears.
A happy place, and that seldom happens.
It was hysterical. Yeah.
Social media was a place to find a lot of humor, a lot of joy, and certainly excitement, because not only is Pope Leo the first American Pope, but he's from Chicago.
Yes.
He's from
South Side guy becomes Pope.
Sox fan becomes Pope.
Well, no. I mean, he's a Chicago sports fan.
I know. But
you know, the Ricketts are Catholics, so I'm sure he'll go to a Sox game.
Are the Cubs still
Cubs game.
Clamoring and hoping that the initial report was actually true?
I think they were very excited. And I don't know that everybody who is not from Chicago understands how Chicago kind of works and the way people get kind of possessive about different things. But we, as a wonderful Midwestern city, have somehow landed a Pope. David, I never thought in my lifetime I would see an American Pope, let alone a guy from the South Side. And, you know, by all accounts, just a wonderful person. And, you know, it's very thrilling. I, of course, was also a South Side seminarian. So it's hilarious to me.
So was there ever a day when a young Mike Mulligan, when you were at Quigley South, would dream in the afternoon in study hall and think, one day I could be Pope?
In fact, one of the reasons I got out is because I couldn't be Pope. There was nowhere to go. That's a joke.
One day, the reason I got out.
No, I'm just kidding around.
Yeah.
No. I mean, you know, to be a priest, you have to have a vocation. And, and unfortunately, I didn't have one. But myself and my two older brothers went there. My parents were immigrants and very good Catholics, and you know, they gave us their religion, and we've tried to pass that down to our children. It's not as easy as it would seem ostensibly, and I'm just saying because my brothers and I grew up in different places, and you know, we have created some Catholics, but I just don't know. It's a difficult thing to keep going. You know, the faith of your parents.
It's a remarkable story, though.
It's unbelievable.
It's a remarkable story for Chicago.
It's so great.
It is. And the fun that people had yesterday was understandable.
Oh,
because
it was hilarious.
How quickly did the story go from the Pope is from Chicago to is he a Sox or a Cubs fan?
Oh, that was so funny.
It was very funny. And the Cubs tweet, I think, is still up there claiming that on the marquee that he is a Cub fan. That's and then funny. His brother telling WGN News that he actually was a Sox fan. And we have a video, or not video, it's a picture, right?
From we him have a picture
at the 2005 World Series.
He's on the phone. He's obviously calling upstairs.
There are other photos of him. Last August, he was in town at the Aurelio's in Homewood.
Yes, with his family.
The original one. Yeah, yes. So he's a very relatable guy.
I talked to Mitch yesterday, and he, you know, Mitch is just the best. And he was saying, between the two of us, you know, Mitch lives on the South Side, and I grew up there. Between the two of us, we got to know somebody that knows this guy. Like, we've got to have some connections. I was exchanging a text with a friend of mine last night, and he was telling me his kids went to St. Rita, and his wife still works with the Augustinians, and she was at an event last year. He spoke. She met him. She spoke with him for about 10 minutes. This is before
all this.
Before any of this.
He was a substitute teacher at St. Rita, I believe.
He had, back in the day, so his mom was apparently a librarian at Mendel. Mm-hmm. And then back in the day, he ended up, he taught some classes at Mendel, and then he was a substitute at St. Rita. Someone sent me a thing about that with the line in it, which I couldn't. He taught physics as a substitute teacher at St. Rita, and someone said that was the Pope's first miracle, teaching St. Rita kids physics. I could not stop laughing at that. But like he was at St. Rita, which is now where Quigley was located. So I went to school at Quigley. Quigley closed down. We stopped producing Priests, and they closed Quigley, and St. Rita was at 63rd and Western on 63rd Street, mm-hmm. and it moved into the into where our school was, Quigley South, which is where the Pope came when he was in Chicago many years ago. Pope John Paul II addressed the American bishops there. So it was pretty extraordinary that a place, and I saw a photo of him meeting the Pope during that trip, which is absolutely incredible. And then to have a Chicago, and again, you know, his life is extraordinary. It's from Dalton to Vatican City via Peru. And I mean, he's an internationalist, right? He's a guy that is a missionary who has spent, you know, half his life in Peru. Pretty extraordinary. It was awe-inspiring to see all of this unfold. And then to finally, I realize I'm a handshake away from the Pope. That's pretty good, given it was day one.
Well, everybody knows probably somebody who knows somebody now who
in Chicago
has a connection to the new Pope. And that's going to be the fun to see this unfold. And now the wait begins, and people will speculate, when will he come home? Already, you know, the editorial in the Tribune is, when will you be back? When are you coming back here? And that will be an amazing moment.
No doubt about it.
Because it hasn't happened since. When was the last time a Pope visited Chicago?
Well, that was John Paul II.
That was that year.
So that would have been like the 1980, 81, mm-hmm. something like that, I think.
It would be historic. And yesterday was certainly, I think, people kind of grasping the reality that I don't think many people expected. Wasn't he even considered? It was maybe mentioned at the time that he was one of the possibilities, but
I read, you know, I mean, there's so many different things out there, David, but I had read a thing basically saying that that he, like the Pope Francis, there were cardinals from 73 different countries that were promoted during his time as pontiff, this particular Pope Leo was Leo the 14th was apparently promoted twice during his tenure, and that he was also like they have the conclave where they're choosing the Pope, and but they don't meet regularly. It's not like they have these, like, hey, let's get a cardinal get together all the time. So the cardinals are all new. They're from 73 different countries. They're all over the world. And as his role is being in charge of the Augustinians, he would travel around the world and meet with bishops and talk about their order, etc. And then when he started working in the Vatican, he started he was like in charge of coordinating cardinal stuff. And in other words, he is one. He has traveled the world and met with a lot of these people, and they don't really know each other, but they know him. So there was this, you know, he was known as a kind of a on the same spiritual track as Pope Francis, who was a mentor to all of these guys. Like, it was almost like he, just by virtue of his job and his career, he had met and interacted with a lot of people that didn't really know each other, just the way the church is set up. And so many different cardinals from different countries that were incorporated into it during Pope Francis' term.
A lot of great profiles will be written.
Oh, I can't wait.
A lot of connections being made.
But the idea of the guys at a World Series is like the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Well, it's funny because of how quickly the story became the Pope is from America. Oh, the Pope is from Chicago. Oh, he's a Cub fan. No, actually, he's a Sox fan. And then the most viewed story on WGN.com is whether the Pope was a Cubs or a Sox fan. And all of a sudden, sports becomes religion because they're very similar.
So funny.
Everything
so
is funny. About, you know, his rooting interests.
Didn't the brother say that his mother was a
according
Cub
to
fan?
His brother on WGN TV, his mother was a Cub fan. Well, let's listen to his brother clarify
this
things.
This is so great.
Clear up the thing about the Cubs and White Sox.
Yeah, he was never ever a Cubs fan, so I don't know where that came from. He was always a Sox fan. Our mother was a Cubs fan. I don't know, maybe that clued in there, and our dad was a Cardinals fan, so I don't know where that all came from. And all the aunts, our mom's family was from North Side, so that's why they were Cubs fans.
But he rooted for the White Sox.
That's right. But where it came from, I don't know, because he would have been the only one.
I think the term in this context for that, thinking he was a Cub fan and claiming him, would be blasphemous. Blasphemy.
Oh, it's so funny.
Yes.
How about the fact that the mother was a Cub fan and the father was a Cardinals fan? Like, that's like, there's an old Irish song, you know. My father, he was orange, and my mother, she was green. It's like, you're kind of like linking a couple of cultures that you don't really think of together.
Yeah, it was very funny. I love all the background
stories. It was so funny.
And how
it was great.
Makes him all the more relatable to a lot of people in the city. And that's really cool. So I think it was the Sox's reaction was classic as well.
Oh, that was so funny. I saw Merck tweet out that they have already sent a jersey with his name on it and a hat.
They did.
And he's always welcome at the ballpark.
And you got to assume, we're making a lot of assumptions here, but you have faith that he was probably a Bears fan as well.
Well,
probably enjoyed the 85 Bears as much as anybody.
Did he enjoy the Bulls in the 90s? you got to ask.
Yeah.
What about that Blackhawks run? That's so much fun.
It's very funny.
Incredible. It's incredible.
Good. And these stories, yesterday was one of those things you kept on wanting to learn more, you know, wanting to know more and wanting to find out, oh, there's this connection, there's that connection. And really, as you know, like now, it's just begun to, he'll be even more fascinating as the days unfold.
Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Look forward to,
I never thought in my lifetime I would see an American Pope, let alone a Pope from the South Side. It's just incredible. And we in Chicago can claim him as our own.
It's hard
favorite son.
It's hard to anticipate things like that because the process is shrouded in such mystery.
Exactly.
And you don't know. It's not like you can say, well, he's going to be a great GM one day. Or I can envision him running for president. You don't really know how they elect popes and
people say stuff like that. Oh, that guy should be pope. You know, yeah, I mean, come on.
But they say that about any sort of pious young man who looks like he's headed to the priesthood.
I will say
that about you one day.
Cub fan, Sox fan, whatever. This is the ultimate Chicago guy made good.
Yes, this is the ultimate Chicago guy made good. And let's face it, if ever a sports city could use a little divine intervention, it would be Chicago about now.
Wouldn't it be something?
It would be. The teams are struggling right now.
Oh, my.
Teams are struggling.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Yeah, we really need a pope. We need a little divine intercession. Need a little,
Yes, the Cubs need a third baseman. Yes, they need a starting pitcher. Yes, they need some help in the bullpen. Yes, the Sox need a direction. The Blackhawks need a star. The Bulls need something. And the Bears could use a lot, but yes, we need a pope.
That's so crazy.
Let's start with the pope.
It's just, I mean, honestly, from the moment I heard this story, I'm still kind of not over it. I don't know
the
when
pope.
I will be. I keep voraciously reading everything I can. Voraciously reading whatever I can. It's great. It's great. The Pope. The funniest thing I saw, so there's a lot of different, you know, pictures of him in a Sox hat, or they have, like, you know, picture of him as Pope, but he was in front of Brubaker's. I saw a lot of kind of funny people trying to, you know, put different things out there. But I thought...
Jardinera on the communion wafer.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I thought the Onion had a photo of the Pope in a hot dog suit.
Yeah.
They just put a hot dog suit over him. And it says... a Chicago style pope. Like, it was so funny. It was the dog. I thought of you, and that, you know, who cares
funny.
What you have on your hot dog?
Exactly.
Who cares whether you won't eat one or you like one? It was classic stuff.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America, decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title. History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's a swing and a ball sent out to right field by Tim Elko. It is up and it is gone. A home run for Tim Elko. That's his 10th home run of the year. Jumps on that first pitch and smashes it out to right field.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. It's a delight to welcome in Scott Merkin, MLB.com, the handsome, intelligent Merkin brother, and he is in Charlotte with the Knights, where the story is. And we're delighted to welcome in on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check them out, Aturo.com. Hey, Scott.
Gentlemen, good morning. How you doing?
Okay. Yeah, we're trying to figure out what the Sox are doing. Why not bring up Tim Elko? Why do they hate that guy? What is it about him that just bothers everyone?
I think it's quite the contrary. I think they have a lot of respect for Tim Elko, and that's one thing that I've noticed is, I mean, not that I've heard bad things about other people, but one of the things you hear across the board from Chris to, you know, Paul Giannis, Chris Katz, of course, Paul Giannis, Sergio Santos, his teammate, is just what a tremendously great guy Tim Elko is. And I actually asked him about that when I talked to him Tuesday, and he kind of laughed and said, you know, he takes as much pride in that as being a good player. And, you know, I think Paul has said this before, and that, you know, you got to wait for your opportunity, and the roster has got to be constructed right. And this is a team with the offense they have that plays a lot of matchups, and it's tough to carry, you know, similar profiles on your team with Tim and Andrew Vaughn. Now, in the same sense, I would think that in the year you are, you know, the team is 10-27. They've, you know, they're a better team than last year. I think they've played better baseball than last year, even though the record is not, you know, much different than what it was last year. I think you have a shot to see guys like this. Maybe Tim Elko was not in your, you know, every team has a big board where they look out more than just the next 2 weeks, the next 2 months, the next year. Maybe Tim was not on that board to begin with. He's 26 years old. But why not now, or if not now, sometime in the next month or next few weeks, get a look and see what you have? Because, you know, I think you really want to see what you have going into next year. Next year is the year that I think they should kind of turn even a bigger corner, but you want to know what you have in place when you're going into that year. So he's doing everything he can, and he's saying, you know, I don't want to say he's saying the right things because he believes it. It's not like he's putting on a show. There's no affectation. He believes that he's just got to focus on Charlotte. And who knows, when I go to the ballpark today before I leave to come home, he may be on his way to Chicago for all we know. But, we'll see. But I think he's doing everything he can to make the case and then some on top of it.
I hope you guys share an Uber to the airport because he belongs with the White Sox. It defies baseball
logic. Give
him
your ticket.
Merck, the big board.
I have a rental car, so he can. Okay, even
he can sit shotgun there, because the only big board that matters is the scoreboard, and the Sox struggle to score runs. It defies baseball logic why they have a guy leading the minors and homers in their system still at Charlotte in AAA. So I don't know what they're waiting for. If not now, when? Otherwise, is there anybody else down there besides Tim Elko that can get a promotion before he does? Because we thought that would be yesterday when Benintendi went on the IL and they brought up somebody else, and it wasn't Tim Elko. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's also, again, it comes down to the matchup situations. Nick is a left-handed hitter. You know, I think you have another guy who's playing well, who's also a little older in baseball vernacular, still much younger than us, but older in baseball vernacular, Corey Jolks, who's killing it down there too, and has actually had a little run with the White Sox in the past. But I think it's all about, you know, kind of the opportunity has got to meet what they need at the top level. Now, like I just said, in the same instance, if you're going to get a look at him and see what he can do at the next level, and sometimes, and I'm not saying this is Tim, sometimes people crush it at Charlotte, crush it at Birmingham, get to the majors, and they don't do it, And let's be honest, I forgot who said this to me in the last couple of weeks, but they call it the major leagues for a reason. You know, no one ever got to the Hall of Fame and said, man, you know, I hit 500 home runs, but God, that year I spent in Double A, that was the key. Those statistics mean more to me than anything. The minor league is what you do to get to the majors, and that's when it really counts. I'm not dismissing the minors. There's been some great stories I'm able to find this week that I've been out here, but it's when you get to the majors that matters, and that's when you have to, you know, really put on the best show.
Is all their pitching help, is that all in Birmingham, or are there guys in Charlotte? I know, hard to put up good numbers in that building.
It is a tough ballpark to pitch in, and I think that's why, excuse me, you may see guys like, I think you will see guys like Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith and Grant Taylor jump straight from Birmingham to the majors at some point. You know, Grant Taylor, I think the key for him is to stay healthy, and if he stays healthy, I could see, you know, the back end of his season being sort of kind of an opener, you know, one or two inning guy, filling out the innings they want him to get to this year in the major leagues. And I think the same could happen for Noah and Hagen. You know, I think Noah and Hagen might be a little bit ahead of Grant in terms of starting rotation because, you know, Grant was dealing with injuries when he first came in. But those of us who saw, you know, all three of them were really impressive. Grant Taylor, for someone who hadn't seen much of him until then, I mean, I you know, you put less numbers in Cactus League, I think, or less merit in Cactus League than you do in the minor leagues. But, I mean, you just saw something with Grant Taylor that was a big leaguer, you know, in the minor leagues. I mean, the two innings, six strikeouts he had against the Dodgers, him facing the heart of that Dodgers order, you just saw a presence and stuff that if he stays healthy, this guy could be on the quick path to the majors. So there are guys at Charlotte, you know, a little more veteran guys that could help the White Sox, but I think the prospects, the pure prospect guys, are at Birmingham and below.
Thanks, Mark.
Great stuff. Thank you so much.
Don't forget to pick up Elko on the way to the airport.
Okay, guys. Take care.
Wow.
He's driving. He's going to drive them right here. That's awesome. Stop by the station first. We'll all hit the south side.
We found that audio from Pat Hughes just comparing PCA, or at least invoking a very special name in baseball history when talking about Pete Crow Armstrong.
And we'll be right back with it, Mully and Haw on the Score.
Grand Bigs.
Bigs time.
Bigs.
With Mully and Haw.
Bigs time.
The Bigs Report with Brad Biggs.
Bigs time.
Biggs.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you're on top of it. You got all the stories. So I read your notebook yesterday when it came out, and really enjoyed it. And it's kind of a fun time of year, because now we'll have the rookie mini camp. We'll get to see what these guys look like, how fast they are, how overrated they are as football players. Apparently, the Bears have the worst draft pick, one of the worst draft picks, according to a guy from ESPN. With the linebacker they took, it's just going to be fun to see everybody get in and learn the lay of the land and get just a chance to watch some of these guys run.
Yeah, I mean, you see them out there in helmets and pads, or not pads, but helmets. You see them moving around a little bit. I'm sure they will arrive at some point today for a little bit of an orientation. And then you get going and they get an idea for how things are going to operate in a full team setting, right? They sort of get introduced to how they get ready for practice, what they're going to be asked to do in practice and individual drills and things of that nature. So when they're with the larger group, they can get up to speed rather quickly.
Brad, I was a little surprised that you are as high on Kyle Manungai as you seem to be. I also wonder if
I think he's got a chance.
Okay, you say he's got a chance, and I think that that's fair. And I think it's exciting because he does look great on tape. I also know they have Roschon Johnson back, and I wonder how their faith in both of those guys may affect their thinking on whether or not they need to add a veteran to the running back room, because I feel like this roster is a little incomplete without adding a veteran to the running back room. Do you agree or disagree?
I think they're going to need to add a running back at some point, quite possibly before training camp. But I don't think there's any need at all to sort of rush into it, because you've got a situation where there's a handful of options down at the running back store right now that you could choose through. And you know what? There's going to be more product on the shelves as we go. There were 25 running backs drafted this year. And that means that some of those guys are going to take jobs from players currently in the league, veterans. That means that you're going to have more running backs become available. That means that even in late August, when teams are working their way down to the 53-man roster, you're probably going to have some running backs with experience come loose. So I don't see any need to rush into it. I think the first order of business for Ben Johnson, for Declan Doyle, for everyone involved with the running back room, Eric Bieniemy for Ryan Poles, is get a handle on the players that you currently have in the building. Get a feel for Roschon Johnson. Like, he's a new player for these coaches. Get a feel for Kyle Manungai, and have an understanding of exactly what you have before you consider what outside option might be good in the mix, might be good for competition.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to just see what they have to accomplish before they get their team together. And obviously part of it is just making sure that the offense is put in, that everybody is comfortable with it, that you're working with the quarterback. We talked a little bit earlier in the week about Tyson Bagent and the fact that that he's going into a potential, after this year, he'll be an unrestricted free agent. And the coach doesn't know him yet. They've got to get to know each other. You'd love the idea of someday being able to, keep drafting and creating and improving quarterbacks, but they got to get up and running with Caleb Williams before anything else.
Yeah, they've got to learn about all their players. And actually, Bajan will be restricted.
Restricted, I mean, yeah.
This will be year three for him. So they've got to get a handle on all their players, and that's from the top of the depth chart.
Okay.
I'm going to try to clean up the line.
Yeah, we got to clean up the line.
Yeah, Tyson Bagent entering restricted free agency, earning $1 million this year, his third season. Being the backup, he is the backup. I don't think Case Keenum is there for any other reason but to provide insurance. But the question remains what the coaching staff, namely Ben Johnson, the new collection of quarterbacks coaches they have as well to evaluate him, what do they believe about Tyson Bagent? And Brad, that's the essential question. We just don't know yet.
No, we don't know. We're not going to know for a while. Like, they're going to go through the rest of the offseason program. They're going to get into OTAs here later on this month. At the end of the month, they'll have a mandatory mini camp in June. And then the evaluation process rolls into training camp. So, there's a lot to be determined in the roster. I promise you this, when the roster is set to begin the 2026 season, okay, it's going to look significant. So you're talking, 16 months from now, something like that. It's going to look a heck of a lot different than it does right now. But it's a process. And as I said, it starts with guys that you consider to be at the top of the depth chart and are at the top of the depth chart, and it works all the way down. There's going to be players that, we're not talking a whole lot about that will factor in. There's been a lot of discussion about the safety position, and I think it's warranted. But a guy that's played an awful lot for three seasons, when he's been pressed into action, is Elijah Hicks, and he's still in the mix. So that tells you that the front office has probably got a greater deal of faith in him than maybe the public does. But he's a guy that the coaches need to see for themselves on the grass. They've spent time going over the film. Now they need to see how he looks in action.
I found it fascinating that there were two questions about the tackle position in your notes. You had one guy just wanting to know the difference between right and left tackle, which kind of amused me. And then there was a question about Ozzie Trapillo and how he's going to fit in and who's going to be the starting left tackle, right tackle. Are you surprised that people are now kind of hyper aware of it, or is it just because we've been talking about the fact that they're relying on a player and Braxton Jones coming off an injury?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, that's been a position that we've looked at since the outside of the offseason. Like, could they get a plug and play starter in the draft or via some other means? And you would expect Trapillo to be at left tackle this weekend and kind of get a feel for that and see how he looks, and then potentially it sets up for a competitive situation between him and Braxton Jones later on this summer. He made 12 starts at left tackle at Boston College early in his career before he was moved to right tackle, where he started 24 or 25 games. And sometimes it's not always the case, but sometimes colleges are giving you a pretty good tell when they play a guy at right tackle and not left tackle, that this guy, if he is going to continue his career professionally, and obviously Turpillo is, is probably a right tackle. That's not always the case, and every guy is moved to one side or the other by the college staff for varying reasons. So we'll have to see. They've got to put him there and see how it looks.
We talk so much about the Bears' defense in terms of their nickel package because they're in that a majority of the time. And yet their base defense still does include three linebackers. That third linebacker spot, Brad, I think is something that remains kind of in a state of flux. They drafted Ruben Hippolyte. The draft pick that Mully was referring to was deemed by one ESPN analyst as the worst draft pick.
Eric Moody.
Yeah,
don't know Eric.
Hippolyte is 5'11", 236, not your prototypical inside or outside inside your NFL linebacker. What are the Bears' plans at that third strong side linebacker position?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's maybe one of the bigger questions that they've got right now. My first reaction is, you know, how much is that? How often are they going to be in their base defense? How many snaps are we talking about? If you're looking at last year with Jack Sanborn, you're maybe scratching the surface at like 25% of the time. So you're talking about a part-time player, okay? And it's possible that guy's not on the roster right now. And that's another spot where if you want to find a strong side linebacker, you can go out and get one of those guys. He's probably not going to be a difference maker, but you can find one of those. They've got a couple candidates on the roster. Hippolyte obviously deserves a look. They drafted him. They felt highly about him. Certainly, he can run. He can really scoot. Amen. Ogbon Bamiga, it would be an option. Carl Jones, an undrafted free agent out of UCLA a year ago, and they've still got Noah Sewell kicking around, who has really struggled to stay healthy. Not only in season, but he's had stuff that's cost him, I think, developmental time during training camp and the off season a little bit. But he's still in the picture as well.
I was kind of amused. We had a texter when we were talking about Hippolyte and that story, who texted him, why don't they just move him to safety?
He could be
anti-linebacker.
That's like it wouldn't be a Bears draft without people coming up with fancy ways to it worked out with Brian Urlacher. There were people that wanted Chris Zorich to play linebacker at one point, right?
Right.
So I don't see him moving to safety. But who knows? He's yet to get on the grass. That'll happen tomorrow in Lake Forest.
Brett, I don't think it's a high priority necessarily, but it has been addressed indirectly. Do you expect before the start of training camp, before the start of OTAs, that Joe Tooney will sign a contract extension?
I would think that's the goal for all the parties involved. Ryan Poles has said that's a something that the organization would like to accomplish. But two sides have got to be happy with what's in front of them. He signed for this season at $16 million. He's 32 years old, and he's still playing at a high level. So the team's got to find out, where its parameters are, and Joe's got to see if the team's vision kind of matches what he's seeking, nearing the end of a decorated career. So I think that's not something I would be concerned about right now. Something you kind of put in the back of your mind and try to keep an eye on. Ultimately, I think both parties would feel best if something were to be finalized before training camp, but I don't see any. I don't see any kind of soft deadline even for this negotiation.
Jalen Johnson was on a podcast over the weekend, and or maybe we heard it yesterday, but he said he's going to get 7 interceptions. That's his goal: 7 interceptions, 3 takeaways, fumbles, and he's planning on scoring a few touchdowns. Those numbers would put him obviously into a different category. Is it okay to have expectations like that or goals like that, as long as you don't press to get that, don't take chances, play within the scheme? Did you have any reaction to it, and especially with Keyshawn Johnson saying, "Well, you can't catch," and the fact that the kid has what is the number? He's got 7 career interceptions.
7 career interceptions in 70 games. But he's going to get 7 next year alone.
Yeah, that if he has 7 picks this season, you would think he's a strong candidate to be all pro. There are 2 players that had 7 or more picks last year: Kirby Joseph, the Lions safety, and Xavier McKinney, the Packers safety. So there's not a cornerback in the National Football League that reached 7 this past season. Yeah, you don't want to see a guy being a riverboat gambler out there in a bid to produce takeaway numbers like that. But at the same time, I love it when a guy puts his puts his goals out there. You know, a lot of times the guys will say, "Yeah, I got a goal," and "Well, hey, what are you thinking?" "Well, I'll keep that to myself." Typical response. It's not quite like Alonzo Spellman, who long ago,
I remember,
said his goal for sacks was high double digits.
High double digits.
Like 80 to 85. I think he meant high teens. Shoot for the moon, right?
Oh, that was awesome.
Brad, I know it's not a major thing, but who's throwing passes to Luther Burden III this weekend?
Yeah, I don't know. They're going to have some guy, and we'll see who it is and how they throw. A lot of times you see these noodle arm guys in rookie mini camp because they, I don't think there's a job available here. There's always competition, but the Bears probably weren't getting first pick of arms that were available, and it can't be windy up there on those practice fields behind Hollis Hall. So you've seen it's not every year, and sometimes in recent years the Bears have had a lot of first round draft picks at the position, guys that can spin the football. But in years that they haven't had that guy, and you've been out on that field and it's been windy, you look at it, and you're like, boy. I know I'm at a professional football rookie mini camp, but it sort of looks like a high school pass floating out there. So we will see who's throwing the ball to Luther Burden and Colston Loveland this weekend.
Good stuff, Brad.
Yeah. Hey, Bigsy, the schedule release is Wednesday, so we're going to be making picks and talking.
Get ready for that.
Yeah.
And good luck with
that's going to be interesting. Have you guys solved this Ryan Presley issue yet?
No, still it's ongoing.
We're working on
it. It's an ongoing thing. Yeah. Have you solved the Caps being down 1-0 in that series yet?
No, but I think they'll bounce back at home.
Yeah, tonight.
Presley,
they will.
Presley can't.
That's happening all the time in the NHL playoffs.
Presley, what did you say, Presley?
He's not missing any bats, guys.
That's what Craig Council said.
Oh, he's not scoring any goals, Brad.
He is draining his knee, though, buddy. Take that into account.
Presley?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So they got a guy with a bum knee. All right. Yeah.
All right. Great talking to you, Brad.
You're the best, buddy.
Good luck solving that one.
See you all later. Right.
That's our guy. That's our guy, Brad Biggs.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
All right, guys, with an off day for the Cubs, where are you at with the team's hierarchy of needs? Yesterday it was closer. It has been starter since Justin Steele went down, and we know that third baseman is the boogeyman position in the lineup. Where are you on this glorious Thursday morning?
Well, I am waiting and eyeing the chimneys at Clark and Addison, waiting for the white smoke to billow out to find out if Cade Horton is going to start Saturday night in New York. And if it's black smoke, I think it'll be Chris Flexen, white smoke for Cade Horton. And then I'll worry about the starting pitching. I still think that today, as I wake up this morning, and it does tend to change every day, doesn't it? There are three big things, as we know, with the Cubs. You worry about their starting rotation because of the injuries. You worry about their bullpen because of Ryan Pressly. You worry about the third base situation because Matt Shaw wasn't it. And maybe he can be again. But I do think they're probably talking about how creative and aggressive do they want to be addressing each of those issues. With the bullpen, I think you're just going to have to wait until closer to the deadline, fortify it, and try to different things. Porter Hodge may get the ninth inning. Ryan Pressly may get the eighth. That would be something I'd consider, regardless of what you may have promised him in free agency. The starting rotation, I would bring up Cade Horton, see how he does in the rotation that really needs him. We overstated how good Ben Brown was yesterday, I think. 103 pitches, he walked two leadoff hitters, and they cost him. So they need some stability there. Third base, it's a mess. It's a mess defensively. So as you try Nicky Lopez and John Birdie and Brujan and who else, I do wonder, if you're getting creative, I can't help but notice Moises Ballesteros is down at AAA Iowa. He can't play third, but can he play first? And if he can play first, can you play Michael Busch at third? Michael Busch has played 75 games at the minors at third base, and Ballesteros has played 60 at first base. It's probably not something you want to do in season, and it sounds one of those sports talk radio hypotheticals. But I don't think the alternative is much better. Anyway, I would say starting pitching, bullpen, third base.
Do we have to do that at the same time? Does Ballesteros have to play first while Bush is playing third?
Well, that gets them both in the lineup. Well,
I just think...
Unless the lefty, then they probably would both sit down.
I'm thinking about
what
that would look like across the diamond.
Yeah,
that
might be kind of funny.
David, I love the sports talk radio hypotheticals, and that is a very interesting one. You could also talk about, we could shake it up even a little bit more, and we could say have Nico go to third and have Bush just go over to second. That's another option.
Because they've done that, yeah.
Right? So there are options. Here's the thing.
How many games has Bush played at second?
To go to Baseball Prospectus in a second and let you know. What's interesting is the fact that you have answers to some of these questions, David, that you nailed, right? You Michael Busch, is he floundering in the field down at AAA? I doubt it. Nicky Lopez, when in the field, has played well at third base. So again, just right away, I know at the end of the day, they only scored one run yesterday.
Yes.
But I had mentioned, if you're the starting pitcher and you look over your shoulder and there's John Birdie over there at third base, does that worry you at all? Does that upset your confidence at all? It could. People are human. It could be a thing. You also, David, and you and I are in agreement on this, have Cade Horton down at we don't know if he's the answer, but at least he's maybe the answer. You don't know until you let him try. What else is he going to do down at AAA? He's made 10-plus starts at every level. I'm just saying, they have options to answer these questions that we all agree are questions. I think the issue is, right now, I think for this coming weekend, I think starting pitching. You're playing the Mets, so I think starting pitching, the next time you take the field over the weekend, that's number one. And by the game, it's a 5:35 pregame, not a 6:35 pregame on Friday.
Thanks for telling me that, because sure, I could have gotten confused, seriously. I would say that it is important to sort of just keep perspective on everything that you're looking at. So it's early in the season, and you're going to have to resolve these issues. I think they need help in the bullpen. I think that bullpens change. Someone may help them that you don't expect. Things are different with bullpens. It evolves over the course of a season. Would it be great if they went out and got somebody? Yes. But to me, the priority is always going to be the starting pitching. The starting pitching has to be the priority because even with some of the guys that are currently your starters, there isn't a track record that makes you believe they're going to be able to be pitching in October. You know, we're sitting here talking in May about what you're going to need at the end of the year. We're sitting here talking in May about cashing in on insurance policies that that may not still be operational by the time you get to October. So you've got to be aware of that, too. But I definitely think, above all else, they probably need a starting pitcher. They've lost a starting pitcher. They've done a good job of covering for it. But by the end of it, of this, you probably need another starting pitcher. I think that would be my priority. I think the bullpen thing, like I said, there are different ways of improving it, different ways of getting better. That doesn't have to be going out and getting Aroldis Chapman, although I believe that's happened and worked before. So keep an eye on that.
He actually may be available.
I really feel like the third base thing should have, could have been resolved in the offseason, and it wasn't. And that's what you're going to have to kind of live with. That is the one of all else that I think you could probably live with, and given the way they've been playing, still be okay. You would like upgrades in all areas. That's unrealistic. I would go starting pitching, bullpen, and then third base in my hierarchy.
You're not wrong. I'm not wrong.
No.
Dustin's not wrong.
No.
It would be wrong to ignore any of them.
I totally agree with it. I'm just saying, if you're prioritizing, maybe that's how you do it. Yeah. All right. We got to get to the show. 312-644-6767. We'll get to your phone calls. Molly and Hall on the Score.
We also have Moises Ballesteros making the jump. I would say that at this point, there are still questions about his defense, how much he's going to catch in the big leagues. But going to you first this time, Jeff, I feel like that we're about as comfortable about Moises Ballesteros' bat as there is pretty much for any hitter in the minor leagues at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the feedback that I had gotten, particularly internally, was bullish on Ballesteros' bat, you know, how young he was and still really productive over a pretty large sample size of 68 games last year in AAA. You know, the catching, as we know, was going to need some work. He's been primarily a catcher. He's had like one game at first base and then gotten some games at DH. But, you know, there's no arguing with the hit tool.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the voice of Jeff Ponce from Baseball America, their great writer on prospects. And he joins us now on the Mully and Haw Show, the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, gentlemen. How are you guys?
Doing well.
I'm very interested to talk to you about Moises Ballesteros, because he made a big jump on your prospect list, right? He moved up, what was it, 30 spots, something like that, from one list to the next. That's always indicative of a guy moving up, getting ready. And as you mentioned, that they don't know what position he will play. He's a catcher, technically. He's a DH. Someone said he's played 60 games at first base, but he's a hitter. He is a professional hitter.
Yeah, through and through. I think that's really what the carrying tool is here. Just to throw a comparison out there in terms of the type of hitter he is, I don't think he's all that different from the Padres' Luis Urias, just in terms of the bat-to-ball skills, kind of that outlier barrel control, just the ability to make contact in a variety of different pitch shapes and pitch locations, which is what I think this really comes down to. The difference between the two is Ballesteros has significantly more power than Urias has ever had. He's a much bigger guy, swings the bat faster, hits the ball at pretty good angles. So this is a guy that's going to hit for a lot of average, but also has 25 home run upside. And I think that's what you're really dreaming on with Ballesteros, regardless of whether he is a DH, a first baseman, a catcher, somebody who does all three. I will say that, for this type of player, the catching is still good enough that it's still an option. And I think we've seen over the last few years that the type of development that happens with catchers, particularly at the major league level, we can point to guys like Austin Wells, and others throughout the game. There's been a lot of guys who have become better blockers and better framers, once they've gotten up to the big league level. They're working with big league coaches. They're working with big league pitchers. It's just more of a game plan, that sort of thing. I think the big question with Ballesteros has been his throwing this year. He just has not been able to get out of the crouch as quickly as he needs to. The pop times have been bad. And that's, just a measurement of catcher to second base. So it's sort of that sort of stuff that I think is a question mark. But overall, there's no questions on the hitter here. This is one of the better hitters in the minor leagues at this moment.
He's not a big guy. He's listed at, I think, 5 feet, 7 inches. So the question becomes, if he's not a catcher necessarily, and the Cubs have pretty good options at that position, could he play first base at the major league level?
Yeah, probably. He's played a game or two over there so far this year for Iowa. He's played some games there before. I think people are less adverse to shorter right-handed throwing players playing first base than they used to be. The hands are fine there. It's still sort of a matter of moving around. I still think his best defensive position is catcher, but that could change. I mean, it's just a matter of him getting more work at first base, getting more comfortable there. But certainly, he's a strong guy. He's a broad guy, but as you said, he's shorter. He's 5'7". There's not a ton of stretch there. He would be one of the smaller first basemen in major league history. So that is kind of a question with Ballesteros at first base. I think it's one of the reasons he hasn't gotten a ton of time there. And ultimately, I think he's probably DH catcher and somehow fits into a catcher platoon a couple times a week.
Jeff, I'm curious, did Colson Montgomery move out of your list? Did he move down in your list? What is your take on him now going to Arizona for tutelage?
Sure. Yeah. So we moved Montgomery out of the list this year. We kind of stood steady with him throughout last season, despite struggling in Charlotte. He was young for the AAA level. That being said, Charlotte is one of the best places to hit in professional baseball. So that did give us some concern. I talked to Colson a little bit at the Futures game during the All-Star break. We had a nice conversation, talked a little bit about some of the blisters and things that he was dealing with in his hands at that point in time. It changed to a different knob on the bat. So I kind of thought, hey, coming into the season, maybe there was some other stuff going on here that sort of was the root cause for him not producing the way that he kind of has all throughout his life. We come into this season, everything that was bad last year got worse. The swing and miss got worse. The swing decisions got worse. He wasn't hitting for the same level of power, and it really seemed to bottom out. So we moved him off the list for now. This was a guy that was a top 25 prospect. It's just the last year the bottom has really fallen out on his prospect status, and it's one of those things where he moves off the list, and certainly, we'll be looking at the numbers. Hopefully he comes back strong and proves us wrong and gets back onto the list. But for now, we just felt like, he had a nice sample size, and we'd give him a good chunk of time to sort of get things right. He didn't. So, yeah, he did move off the list in this most recent update.
Jeff, thanks a ton. Really appreciate your time. Great stuff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, guys.
That is Jeff Ponce from Baseball America.